Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Welcome to the After Things podcast, where we talk to creatives like yourself about being creative and hopefully give some useful advice or not. Joining me, as per usual, is Mr. Brian Brushwood.
Hello, hello, hello.
Justin Robert Young.
Hello, friends.
And live from Colorado is our special guest, Peter J. Wax.
Where it's already starting to get cold. That's right. Next time you visit Andrew, we're going to have snow for you again.
There was snow the last time I was there. Second to last time. It was crazy. So Peter is joining us on After Things because we wanted to talk about a project that we're working on, and I actually wanted to pick the brains of Justin and Brian and maybe the chat room too, because we've been working on this thing for quite some time, and I've hinted at it, talked a little bit about it. What it came down to was
you've been a big tease about it
as authors trying to figure out what would make our lives easier. What are tools and services as authors that we could use? And I had been working, looking sort of kind of for technology solutions to an extent. Peter has been working in the industry for years, working different publishers, authors, as well as his own career. He's worked for Kevin J. Anderson. He's worked WordFire. He's been advisor to other publishing groups and talks a lot about writing, is a frequent guest at writing conventions. And I had a project that I've been developing called Writer Tool, which basically it started the idea of making it very easy to share excerpts from books and to make it very easy for people who like your stuff to share your stuff with other people. And it started off with just the idea of something you put a little link at the end of a book, say embed this if you want to share the sample. And then it extended into developing a website that made it easier for authors to create author websites, because if you try to go to other websites to kind of create stuff, to try to make something that works well if you write books or stories is problematic and takes a lot more time and it's hard to maintain in many, many ways if you're using such a narrow case. So that became the idea of creating a site where an author could go up to sign in, create an account, quickly create a page, list their books there, put the links to Amazon and where else you want to sell them, Kobo, Barnes & Nobles, etc., put really easy to read samples of your books there. Also upload stories so people have a reason to go to your site. It's like, hey, go read this latest story, go do this. And a lot of other features that, were coming to our, as we talked about this more and more. And so Peter, I showed Peter sort of the roughest version of this, just sort of a demo version. Probably was it November, Peter?
It was October or November. It was a long time ago.
And so it became kind of an ongoing project, and I talked to different friends who are developers about helping develop it, and they're helpful, but there's only so much time that a friend can volunteer to spend on something like this. And so long story short, Peter and I were very, very excited about the idea and what it could do. After my birthday, May 25th, hint, hint, I decided that, I was happy with what I did as a writer the previous year, but I wasn't as happy with what I did outside of that. So I sat down and decided to learn how to program Ruby, how to use Ruby on Rails, and actually how to build this thing instead of trying to beg friends to help me with it. And 2 months later, after diving deep into that, in late night conversations with Peter about features and what we can add and how to make this thing work, yesterday we took off the curtain or unveiled the curtain or we did the metaphor and show the first phase of it. And so the first phase is just my page and Peter's page, and we're trying to figure out like what's broken, what doesn't work. And then we're going to move into the next phase and shortly in a week or so where we're going to bring in other authors and let them create their own pages. And we're just trying to make sure that everything works. And that's the key, is that, we've had great feedback in the last 24 hours from people as we move forward on that. And so now we're officially talking about AuthorPage, AuthorPage.com.
So AuthorPage.com, if there's literally 10 seconds that we're in an elevator together at Dragon Con or whatever, and just like, oh, you're not on AuthorPage, you got to do it because you've got
books. It's a free website for authors, makes it easy to promote your books and share with your fans, build up your fan list, everything.
Right on.
Yeah, pretty succinct.
I'm going to guess, and this is me, since this is all new to me, I'm going to guess there's like a blog or a regular update component to the whole thing, so that you could put out latest
news. No, I was
news.
Told that was a horrible idea by somebody I won't name.
All right. So Andrew showed this. I mean, I've been talking with Andrew about this for about as long as it has been in development. I am very, very excited for it to roll out. For me, in my thought about it, I think that it's at its best when it is at its simplest. That this is a place where you can find books, new books, sign up for mailing lists, and have an easy way to interact with an author, either by way of finding their contact information or by, you know, commenting on, you know, specific books or finding ways to get to places where you want to get that. Also, what I think is really the most interesting and exciting...
It does have a blog, guys. I ignored his advice. I'm just pointing that out. So, yeah.
Yeah. What I think is really, really exceptional about it is that you can very easily create a very readable way to read the first chapter of anything. So if you click on any of these books and then just go to read a sample chapter, it auto shows you, you have to put it in, but it shows you a really well formatted first chapter. And this is something that I think is really, really lacking, especially if you look at, I mean, right now, the best version of this that exists for authors is on Amazon, which A, is fantastic because so many books are found on Amazon, but that's for Amazon. Amazon will put a link to a garden hose right next to your book because for them it's a win if somebody comes into the store looking at your book, doesn't buy it, but buys a garden hose. This is just about the book and the author, and I think that that's really, 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 really exciting. And it solves a lot of the problems that authors, run into initially in terms of not being able to put together a succinct website and not being able to put together a website that, to be frank, looks good at all.
Is there a...
Well, you're hitting on a really big problem for a lot of authors out there is that, you know, it's not about the promotion. It's not about the web savvy. It's about creating the story, creating the book. And a lot of people have really bad websites. And this gives them the opportunity to have something that's super clean, focused, that their fans can go in, grab favorite stories and books, and actually, you know, use it to promote them. So I think you're hitting it on the head with the clean, simple website.
Is there a review aspect to it? Is there a discoverability? Like, if you like Andrew Main's book, do you discover Peter J. Wax through that?
So what we're trying to do is create this from the author's point of view. And so it's not a Goodreads. It's not a site where fans go to rate stuff or whatever. We're like, what do you want as an author and you want control? So you can go take your the best reviews you've had, whatever. You can post those. I can post in my favorite books as an author and say, check out Peter's books. Check out this other stuff. So it's everything from the author-centric. So we're giving the author control over that sort of experience because – my problem with a lot of other sites and pages, like if you go there to go, if I say, hey, go check out my thing, there are 30 different things trying to pull you away from there. And I want to control that experience and say, I want to tell you about my book. I want a thing that does that. And I want to focus on that. I don't want pop-ups. I don't want to say, yeah, if you're thinking about this, but maybe go look at somebody else's book. So everything's done from the point of view of, as a writer, what would I want on my own personal website to have control over? And then we're going to have social aspects for writers to talk to writers, to find services and stuff. We may have a layer for like fans and stuff to create fan pages where they have favorite authors and to collect stuff. But right now, you have to say, what's our goal? And our goal is let's create the best tool for writers.
So it just makes it dead simple to create a good gallery portfolio of all your work.
Yeah, it's the theming. The theming is so Bryce is on my page, or I think Bryce is on my page right now, and I can go in and, I mean, changing it is, I am literally two clicks away. Go ahead and refresh that, Bryce. Boom. I mean, I just did that as I was talking, was able to change up the theme, and like, let me go to a more radical theme here.
It kind of went from a light theme to a dark theme.
Yeah, now click it again, refresh again.
Oh.
Okay.
There you go. Oh, so, cool. And it's even got like a sort of effect on the titles.
Drop shadow.
Yeah.
Went into Photoshop, created my own 3D texture effect, lay over the books, put in a drop shadow and all that. So, that you know, this is the thing that's still, those themes are still work in progress. So that's, you know, we wanted to create themes, and I'm not a professional theme designer. So that's, you know, one of the things we're going to be looking into bringing more expertise to that by changing it again. So you can change that really, really quick. One of the problems I've had with my you know, doing a website is, so let's see, I've got my front page.
By the way, I just signed up, and it definitely, I got one of those dead simple recaptchas that where all I had to do is click the button that says, I am not a robot, and I did it, and then I hit submit, and it says, recaptcha failed. Try again.
That was MailChimp, not us.
Okay, whatever it was, but the point is, I failed at the literally click this button to show that you're not a robot.
Yeah, we have our own system to sign up, so Bryce, if you go hit it again, I'll show you. Like, I just, and talking to you guys here, I was able to change the front page text on the thing. So, you know, that's how easy we want it, because that's one of the problems is trying to update websites and to like do updates, and it gets to be such a pain in you know, the neck to go do that, that we wanted to create a way to make that super easy to change this stuff. So one of the many, many features we're trying to put in there. But yeah, that's we have like signing up for email lists, things like that, you know, very, very dead simple there.
I mean, because that's the biggest thing is when you talk about what the best places for people to gather are right now, it really is for fans or merchants. Like, there's really nowhere there for authors. And it's something that I know from another end, you know, Brian and I, you know, certainly have a large problem. Whenever we guest on a podcast, Brian, and we're like, oh, we do a million. There's always the joke of like, you know, the people who know what we do know that we do a billion different podcasts, right? And there have been attempts to do like about.me and stuff like that to do some kind of simple landing page, but none of them are really good, you know? Like, ultimately, I think we both default to the same answer, which is just like, I don't know, follow me on Twitter. I tweet about what I do on Twitter, and that's just kind of the way that it is. But there's no great way to just let people know, hey, here's just a simple thing where it's like all the podcasts that I do and find the one that you like, you know, or pushes people, you know, podcasting is a little bit different of a situation because it's so personal where people read it. But if it's like, I want people for the first week to, I want to direct all my book sales to one place as opposed to another place, then I want to make the default button on a place where I'm getting a lot of traffic or I'm putting a lot of attention, then, you know, you can change that with AuthorPage. And that's something that I think is kind of new media wide, but AuthorPage really has an opportunity to solve that problem for people who are, you know, pushing.
Speaking of which, Open Bayou in the chat had the exact same question that I had, which is if you give somebody your AuthorPage.com website and they go and then they click and they see the first chapter, when they, I assume there's some link that says buy the book, does it use your author affiliate or your Amazon affiliate code when they go over?
It uses the AuthorPage affiliate. That's how we pay the rent.
Oh, got it.
Yep.
So that's the trade-off. So you as the author, you still get this book sale. You make your money from that. So we're using our affiliate code as a way to pay for it. So
got it.
That's the whole business model there. And we're very open. We're very like, this is the way we're going to do it. But if you go put, like, if you list it, let's say you host it on your own on Payloads or whatever, we'll let you do that. You know, we're totally agnostic for how you want to sell it or where you want to push it. And if there's an affiliate we can get from doing that, we'll do that. But, you know, because the problem is like, so we've got some partners that want to use it, that, like, you know, publishing and other, you know, industry partners that they're anxious to put this, you know, in front of their groups and stuff. And I had a conversation with somebody at a publisher, and they're like, oh, this is great. I hope you're going to charge for it. And I'm like, authors don't want to pay for stuff, you know. It's that the number one, we want to make it, you know, I'm a big believer, you can make something free and pay for it, just do that. Two, I don't think that's really a very worthwhile market for us to try to, like, say you got to pay us X dollars a month for this thing,
right?
Peter, your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm my brain is still back on the how simple it was to build. You know, I'm in the same space as you. Generally, the average author is out there selling, you know, maybe a couple hundred copies of each book each year. They're struggling, they're fighting, they're trying to get their name up. You know, it's a struggle to figure out, am I going to pay, you know, $5 a month for this service? Am I going to, you know, it's not something that's easy to dig into the wallet, because, you know, there's a reason that the term starving artist is used to describe starting artists, starting writers, any type of creator who's building their way up. So I, you know, anything that we can do to keep it free for people. Yeah, absolutely.
And we think it's going to be, you know, one of those, you know, as Brian, as we've talked about those models where like, we'll have a lot of amateurs creating sites and stuff that aren't really going to be making revenue that are going to cost us. But we think there'll be enough high volume authors will do that. They'll offset the cost of that. And so we just, you know, we shelled out some money to buy authorpage.com because we thought that would be like the most sort of definitive, like, I'm a writer. Where do I find you? Authorpage.com/my name, you know, and figured out, you know, what would be trivial for some but was challenging for me, like how to use a Rails, you know, database and system, and how to use a Rails system and have, you know, the URL point towards your name and not, you know, /users/authorpage or whatever.
Right.
So.
Right. Well, and so often that's the simplicity that makes something take off, is if it's dead simple and you could just, you know, like if it works, even if you don't tell someone, like let's say I meet an author and I remember their name and I have a good odds that if I go to authorpage.com/their name, something pops up. That's what's going to take off on its own.
Yeah, that's exactly it, Brian. Is that we want to make it as simple as possible. We want to create, and by creating it free, we just want to make it a resource for people. And authors, like you, have a lot of control over your links and stuff. We'll help you, you know, like a lot of authors need to build up their email list. And at first, our solution was like, let's just, you know, here, put your MailChimp link here. But I talked to somebody who don't even have MailChimp or they don't use any of the other services. So we said, well, let's just add, you know, let's go add in our own function to help you collect email addresses from people so that you can build up your list, because it's one of those things that, you know, Brian, you and I live and die in many ways by our email lists.
Yeah. And really, if you're an author of any variety, you have to build your list and you have to diversify your list. You have to be able to get to your crowd multiple different ways. I mean, we're sitting on you know, between the YouTube account, between the Twitter account, between the Facebook and, you know, Google Plus, I'm using air quotes, and the email, like I'm still hungry for more ways to reach anyone who gives a damn about the stuff that I do. And just collecting them is the biggest thing.
Yeah, we all are hungry. You know, when you're talking about the simplicity, that is actually something that Andrew, you just so nailed it. You know, you learned a programming language to do this, but I wanted to talk really quickly about that first time when you had me go in and create my page, and I didn't bother to read the walkthrough, and you know, I was just like, I'm just going to go hit buttons and mash buttons. Now, I'm with hardware, I'm great. I can build a computer, you know, without even just, you know, hand a pile of parts to me, and I'm good to go. But I'm a Luddite with software. I'm a complete moron with it. And it took me, what was it, like 27 minutes before I had every section on the site up running with some of my info and content and everything like that. And it's so intuitive that I think is also one of the key things. You know, writers don't have a lot of time to do things besides create. And, you know, talking about hungrily using every tool to that you can grab into to go out there and find people who are fans of your creation, that's a huge time sink. So that is part of the other piece of the simplicity of this that just, well done, Andrew.
I mean it's critical to get feedback and to figure stuff out, because the part of the problem is like, you know, for me, it's like, well, it's obvious how everything works. And I had stuff where I'm like, well, no, this is consistent there. And I'm like telling people, like, no, it should be consistent. This means this, so it always means that. But he's like, yeah, but I don't know that that would mean that, or I'm not used to this contextual stuff. So I have to sit back and go, you know, I thought that was a best practice, but maybe that wasn't, you know, or how do I simplify that? And we're still figuring stuff out. Like, you know, the question came up about doing an FAQ. I'm like, well, it has an FAQ, just the bottom of the page and the footer, but maybe it needs to be more prominent, you know? a lot of those things are still trying to figure out, because, you know, you get deep, like I get deep, deep into the woods where, you know, and we know that, like, our plan is this, is first is let people go look at the front end, give us feedback. And I have some questions I want to throw to everybody in a second about that. Next step is going to be bring in a few people, some authors who want to put some books up and to check that out as we, Peter and I, work on the documentation and try to explain things. And then third is we'll be working with some partners to put it in front of more people. But it's that you don't know what you don't know, and you, what you may be totally obvious to you is only obvious to you because you spent 3 weeks thinking about it and coming to what was the obvious decision.
Do you guys have like a planned rollout schedule as for when you want to hit certain benchmarks as far as people getting, you know, at this point we want to have this many users, and at this point we want to blah, blah, blah?
So we have... Step one is to find all the little bugs on the front end, you know, and I've been making changes, and I've been creating new bugs too. I woke up this morning to find out that I totally destroyed the way the menu system worked last night when I was like, oh, I should just use this menu element here instead of this. And then I woke up to one in our bug tracker. We have a bug tracker, by the way, if you find something, tell us. And then Peter like, yeah, I don't want to wake you up, but this thing's kind of broken. So I got up. I'm like, oh, I know what I did, and fixed that. So that's phase one is that. Second phase is going to be we're going to be working on documentation, and Peter's going to be putting together most kick-ass guide to publishing, which is going to be part of this. And we're going to bring in writers and other people to use the back end so we can figure out how do we I think that you can explain to somebody in a three-minute video, you'll know everything you need to know about how to do it and how to create the functions. It could be wrong. So that's going to be the next phase. And once we feel confident enough that somebody who's never spoken to Peter or I, who just comes to the page cold, will be able to be up and running in 10 minutes, then we're going to open up to a wider group.
And so in the meantime, what can fans of the show or people who maybe don't have a, like I know as somebody who's written a few books, I would love to enter. All I did was go and click on the sign up for the beta list and put my information in, and I assume I'm going to be maybe given a login at some point, or should I have already gotten something?
Yes. So what we'll do is when we do that, we're going to do a beta rollout. We're going to put together, like, the next step is to put together a video, just a video like this is how the back end works and how to do it. We didn't want to do that right away because we're trying to figure out what's different. And I literally added 2 days ago, I added a whole, because we incorporate like Google Analytics into it, and you can do things like A/B testing, so you can have an alternate version of a description for a book and test that versus another to see which one get the most Amazon clicks through. So we have a lot of these high-powered features, and now we're trying to figure out how do we make them more simple, because if I tell somebody, well, go, most authors don't have a Google Analytics code, so, you know, that's frustrating. So two is I had to figure out what's a data package I could put in there. So I put in a simple one, which basically on my end, my page, I can go and I can see how many views I had in the last hour. I can see how many views I had today. I can click on my books. I can see how many people looked at my books in the last hour, in the last day, in the last 30 days. So we have to show people what this stuff is and make it easy. And so make it easy to understand. So design questions. Let me throw this to the committee here. If you go to, let's go to Peter's page here. And if we go click on books, we have a list of his books here, and we have this sort of more thing. And we think that that's probably going to be the first page people are going to look at after they go to, you know, the main page. And my thought initially was let's click on more, and it takes you to a separate page where it's got a whole listing for the book. Do we do that, or back on that page, should it just expand to reveal the whole book? Also, should we be putting like the Amazon buttons and the other buy buttons on that page right there, below there?
I think it's on that page if you can do it cleanly.
Yeah, that's the only question is how clean it'll be, because on the other hand, like, I mean, just a single design element, like making something too cluttered like that can really jeopardize people's enjoyment of that being their go-to place to explore a new author.
Yeah. I mean, I would say, if it slides down and it just seems like, you know, where like, for example, what we're looking at now, like Bloodletting Part One would fall, and right under Second Paradigm would be the Amazon link or whatever. Mm-hmm.
So it would work like on the front page where we have the accordion for the email sign up. So it would work like that. I think and Peter, I want your opinion. I mean, Peter, of course, I want your opinion on it. But like, I think we need to put the buy buttons on that page.
You know, originally I was completely on the side of having buy buttons on that page. I was like, well, why can't they buy here? Why can't they buy here? But the more that I've played with it, the more I've kind of reversed my stance. And I really like the way that it's laid out, where people can just kind of look through the list of books and then be like, okay, you know, you can click on the cover, you can click on the more button, whatever, and you can bounce over and look at the book page. But I like this because, you know, let's go to Second Paradigm. I actually utilized a lot more functionality on Second Paradigm than the other books. So, you know, I've got a quote from Brooks. I've got an editorial review. I've got the actual, you know, book back text and tags down at the bottom. And so, you know, I used a lot more of the features that we have mm-hmm. available on this. And so having that separate landing page, I think it gets too cluttered if there's all of that information in an accordion plus the rest of the books dropping down below it.
Yeah, I'm against the idea that there would be a bunch of buy buttons automatically loading there, because part of this experience is this is going to be a personal experience between author and reader, right? You are inviting the reader into the way that you would be as an author, very happy with your work on display. And hierarchically, if this were to be looked at as comparatively to you walking through a bookstore, there should be one action between looking at the book, thumbing through the book, and then looking at the price, right? Like, that's something that can be, you know, one click beyond. But if that one click also is what gets you more information and everything, then I think having the buy button there is appropriate.
So that's helpful. I mean, that's the thing that we need, is because we get so up in our own heads. So another question here is, you'll notice that what's gross and not elegant right now is the buy buttons. And I just went back and forth trying to figure out, like, the reason that the Amazon button behaves differently right now is because I have a Google event tracker click to it. So if Peter put in a different version of the book description, in an A version and a B version, we can tell which one encouraged more clicks on Amazon. And so that's why that looks funky compared to the other ones. So should that be an Amazon button that looks like the Amazon slick button? And should it be a Kobo button and a Barnes & Noble button?
I think it should be one button format.
Okay.
I mean, it depends on which ones look better.
Well, like, and also, like, I would love examples of, if we have some ideas of, like, hey, these buttons, these are standardized format buttons that all look good, because I'm not in love with those buttons at all. You know, we are very, very receptive towards contact at author page. If you say, hey, here's a thing that looks good over here, or this is a thing that looks good here, please tell us, because Peter and I can go back and forth over and over again, but we have very similar viewpoints on a lot of things, and we're not the person on the other side of the house, because we have to please the author, and then we have to please people who are using this to go find information about books and stuff. So, you know, that's going to be helpful. You know, and it's weighing those different features. And so one of the things we're excited about is it's very easy to share stories. If you click on Peter's page, you can see he's uploaded a bunch of short stories here, and we put in the read time. So if you want a quick read, whatever, you can read a short story. So we're able to use our book format for that.
I actually had a fan reach out to me. a reader reached out to me last night and say that the read times are very, very accurate. She read One Large Universe, and she was like, yeah, and I was surprised to discover it took me exactly 8 minutes.
So I looked at the medium, the rate at which they figure out their read times, and I didn't agree with it. And so I did my own sort of a little fudging on that to figure out what I thought should be, you know, an accurate read time. And I think I tried to figure that if people are reading a short story, you're not going to scan as much as when you read, let's say, a news story. So, yeah. those things will vary. We should have like a slider. Are you a slow reader? Have you had coffee today?
No, I mean, I think that these are good. I mean, these are, you know, to me, what really, really sold me on this idea was really this formatting. And what I would encourage everybody to do is look at how these stories format on a phone, how they format on your iPad, how they format on your desktop, because I really just like, you know, how this looks. I think it feels really accessible, especially on mobile, in a way that nothing else really does. And, you know, I think it's because not many of the other big places where people talk about or buy books, like, you know, Goodreads or Amazon, really have that much of an interest in being a place where you're easily able to read stuff. You know, either Amazon wants you to buy it, or Goodreads, you're probably already read it. You know, there's not a lot of like new stuff kind of going up there. So,
look at the core functionality and design philosophy of each site. The purpose of Goodreads is not to read books, but to tell people what you are reading, so that they can then read it. It's a social network based around liking what you're reading. The purpose of, you know, Amazon is, of course, to sell the book. There's nothing out there that the purpose is to encourage reading.
Or to focus on the books themselves, because obviously as authors become, celebrities, and they become brands, you know, if you bump into Stephen King for the first time at the Rite Aid and he hands you his card and takes you to stephenking.com, you know, for all you know, it's going to be talking about the charity that he's promoting. You go to George R. R. Martin's site, you're going to hear about his fantasy football picks or whatever. Whereas like this, the brand of this seems to be, it's who it is and what they write, and that's it. And I think that there's a simplicity to it that that I think is very appealing for somebody shopping for a new favorite author.
Yeah, although I will say, never follow Martin's fantasy football picks. They all end up on the injury list.
Well, I'll tell you what, considering his track record, that's probably lucky for them.
Of creating a way for authors to sell short stories, and there's not a market for books that are really under $3. If you want to put something on Amazon for 99 cents or $2, they take a much bigger chunk of it, and so that's going to be another thing that we're going to look into trying to do. We're just asking ourselves, what do we want as authors? What would be perfect? What would be the perfect thing to solve problems for Peter and myself?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think this is what I really, really loved about this was it was drawing a really tight circle around a very, very pernicious problem for authors, and you know, I am extraordinarily impressed with what you guys have put together.
So to answer two questions from the chat realm, we maybe already own podcasterpage.com. Just throwing that out there, just so you know. We are looking at like where can we create the single purpose for this thing to do it. And this is not meant – if let's say you write and you do other things, then you could take the link to this page and put it in your main page as your book section. Click books and it'll take you to this thing. So you could use it as your main page. Or you can use an ancillary. There's a lot of controls that, so if you just use it as a books page, your front page is like, welcome to my page for books, and you don't have to have the header with the photos or whatever. We're trying to make this a lot of options, but simple, and that's the hard part. So somebody asked, why Rails? And the answer comes down to this, is that I was trying to, you know, I kept going back and forth with when it came to, you know, writing or trying to like code, where I wanted to create a lot of stuff. I've had a lot of projects I've wanted to do before, and I was always asking friends for favors to help me with that stuff. And that often as it became more complex, it was hard to follow through on things. And, you know, it was May. It was just literally May. I said, you know, maybe I should just buckle down and learn how to code and how to do it. And I've used JavaScript. You know, we created back in the day when we created our sites like Weird Things and iTricks and all that. We used WordPress and a little bit of PHP and, you know, HTML and CSS and all that. So a little bit, but not a really deep understanding of stuff. And I thought, let me really get to enough where I know how to find the answer to do things and do things more complex. So I started Ruby. If you want to learn a language, I highly recommend Ruby. Ruby is very simple. Ruby is very forgiving. Ruby has its limitations as far as speed and other things. When you're talking about, you know, if you're trying to do something that's like gaming or something like that, it's not the language you want to use. But for a lot of stuff and web stuff, it's perfect. So I learned Ruby. There are a lot of great tutorials. There's tryruby.org. If you go to tryruby.org, fun little intro to it. You see how it makes things very simple. So like, you know, a big thing you use a lot in programming is like, you know, a loop to loop through a bunch of things. In JavaScript, you got to set up your variable I, how many times it's going to count off I and do all that. In Ruby, it's literally, you know, you say your variable dot each and then do and then brackets whatever you want it, you know, the variable name, and then you put what it to do and then say end. I mean, it sounds like a lot listening to it, but trust me, it's so much more simple to do that. So I started the Ruby. I did every single tutorial I could find on Ruby. I started with the Try Ruby, and then I moved on to all these other beginner tutorials. And so I spent several days doing that. And then after a couple of weeks of just trying to get that under, you know, in my wheelhouse, I tried Rails stuff first, but I was just so not sure what was Rails and what was Ruby. And I saw advice out there from people who were more experienced programmers that it's like, as a writer, the further away you get from where you start, the worse your advice can be. Would you agree, Peter? You know?
Absolutely. And
it's like you listen to a lot of like writers have been writing for 20 years. They tell you stuff like, I don't think, you know, that's really, you know, what it is. So anyhow, I thought Ruby was great. And then I moved into Rails. And I did several Rails tutorials. One of the best ones I did was 1 month Rails. Did it in 4 days. 1 month Rails, don't be thrown by the name. Did 1 month Rails. And that gave me enough of a foundation to start doing what I wanted to do and how to find out answers for stuff. So that's why I did that. Is in answer to like, if we can create web pages for other stuff, you know, we'll do that. You know, we're for other services and stuff. You know, we're absolutely going to be, you know, looking into, you know, what other areas we can do and where, but we want to stay within what our expertise is.
Well, you know, this is a very pivotal part for you guys going forward, because as soon as you put an idea kind of out into the world, everybody sees it as their own thing, right? Everybody, you know, this is where you start to get into the woods. And what I think has been very, very admirable for you guys going forward has always been that this is about your relationship with authors. You guys are authors. You know that world. You know who to talk to. You know what those issues are. And, you know, just building the most effective tool. And I think even going forward, I know people have said like, oh, what about podcasters? What about photographers? What about this, that, and the other? They are going to best have a solution when they can solve a problem for authors and then think about, okay, well, what works here? What doesn't work here? You know?
You know, there was another question that I thought was really good that actually keyed into something that we haven't talked about. There is someone, Stacy, I think, asked if there was a social networking aspect behind the page. And Andrew, you actually built in two kind of channels or venues for social networking. One, readers can email, tweet the stories and chapters that they read on the site. But there's the promote page as well. You want to talk about that for a sec?
Yeah, so we have what you don't see is sort of on, and I think next time we talk about it, I'll give Bryce a code in the back end so you can see the back end part of it. We have a lot of built-in stuff to make it very easy to like promote, like to create tweets and to push stuff out there, and it suggests this is a tweet. We want, the goal is if you're an author and you're like, all right, I need to spend 30 minutes promoting, what do? Just go to author page, open up your author page account, go to promote, and we'll say, go do this. Just here's a thing you can do really quickly. We'll give you ideas for how to promote. We'll come up with suggestions for tweets to put out there, our news emails to send out there, you know, because that's, Brian, how much time do you spend trying to figure out like what your promotional emails are going to look like or what they're going to, you know, what they're going to say?
My promotional emails, is that what you said?
Yeah.
I'm not familiar with that industry term. I mean, you mean the crap I write?
Well, when I get a rogues gallery thing, what do you call that?
I don't know. Just the you said emails. I heard e-bills, and I was thinking that it was like playbills for the electronic age or something. I was confused. I don't know. Those go through like 3 to 4 hours process. You just spit something out. You hand it to the other person who points out all the things you did wrong, and then you go back again and you're like, there's not enough references to Voltron and Transformers and Star Wars in there. And then you get somebody like, yeah, that's pretty good. And then
yeah,
and,
you
and
do, you do great ones. You do really, really good ones. They feel fresh. They feel original. They don't feel like just sort of template-y kind of stuff. But it's a process. You have several people involved in that. And that's part, if you're a one-man band and you're trying to promote a book and you want to every week send out to do something, and if it takes a good 4 hours to figure out a plan to do that, that's a lot. That's a lot. And that's one of the problems on the back end.
And you know, we have the benefit of like, I'm going to – I usually have John do the first draft because John just – you know, he's mainly interested in, you know, what are the vitals that will get this thing sold? And then I look at him like, well, that looks like an advertisement. And so then I try to tell a story. And then John looks at it again through the lens of like, well, this is a fine story, but does it hold my attention? And then he's like, well, all of this could go. So it's like those are roles you can assign yourself as you make multiple passes of it. I'm sure you guys do this with your writing as well, is like, first let me write it as I see it in my head, and then let me write it as, or let me read it as somebody who is less tied to it, and what is when is this person tuning out, and what can I inject there to rope them back in?
Mm-hmm. We're looking at, if we narrow it down to trying to work with writers, we can come up with very helpful things to say. We know that this works well for writers. We know this works well for that. And, you know, we're looking at some point of even creating a system where it's like, hey, let us promote your book for you. You know, we'll create an automatic system or something to go do that. And we're talking about, we want to make this scale for everybody. So if you're like, hey, I just wrote a book, I've never written a book for whatever, we want to help you find a way to make sure it's the best book it can be, how to find an audience for it, and how to get it out there.
Well, heck yeah, man. Well, and I guess in the meantime, back to the original question, like, what could we do? The short answer is to check it out, to write you guys and let you know what we want to see from it. If you're somebody who wants to have one of these pages, you can go ahead and sign up for the beta on there. If you're somebody who is reading it, trying to learn more about Peter J. Wax and Andrew Main, but there's some obvious question that you feel like is unanswered, I'm sure you guys would like to hear about that as well.
Yeah, we've got a whole, at the bottom of the page, there's a whole issue tracker thing, and we've had 6 responses. We've been able to address every single one of those so far, so that's been good. And that's, you know, one of the problems we have to deal with is, we're figuring this thing out. Like, we were about to launch yesterday, and I realized there are a lot of vulnerabilities. If you find a vulnerability, tell us. You know, don't go put your Russian porn up there just yet. Just send that directly to me, and then tell us about the vulnerabilities. We're not experts at what we're doing here.
Good call,
guys. Thank you for letting us talk about AuthorPage.
Oh no, man, I'm excited to continue to see it evolve. You know, this is something that I know you have worked a tremendous amount on, you and Peter, and this is something very, 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 very exciting, because, again, very rarely do you get these kinds of like really great focus solutions. And you know, considering where, you know, the money can come in from these sort of like no harm, no foul affiliate code stuff, it's just a win-win for everybody.
We hope so. We want our interest to be very much in line with the interests of the author. And part of the problem is that different services function differently. If you're Facebook, you're the product. Your product advertisers you to have you promote to other people. And Facebook provides a wonderful service. But Facebook is also, it's a marketing machine. And, you know, if you're using other systems or services, like, I love Amazon. I have a great relationship with Amazon. But Amazon knows that, like, once somebody's on my book page, Amazon wants to make a sale. Doesn't matter what they buy, as long as somebody buys something. So if that means having literally 40 different advertisements on an average book page for non-things that aren't that book, how do we do that? So we're trying to work really hard to keep our interest in line with the authors. We're going to be working really hard to figure out, once people go to your page, how to help your fans find something they want to read and how to do that. How to help authors bring people there. We're big on the whole idea of use short stories to get people started. Hey, come to my site, not just to look at my books, read a free short story, whatever. So,
and that's, I think, you know, really, really where you can start to generate a lot of traffic is when you have a way to just say, hey, look, what, again, this is about the relationship between readers and authors. And that's really, I mean, I know I'm really excited because the likelihood that I can write a short story that I'm proud of is fairly high. I have a few very silly, stupid books that, you know, periodically sell a few copies. And if I can generate interest in that by putting up a funny new short story, and I've got a place that doesn't lead me to putting in unnatural kind of links in a certain place and keeps people in a natural ecosystem where people can then buy the other silly ebooks. That's rad. That's great. I think that solves a huge hurdle for me.
Well, thank you. Any picks?
Man, it's not a creativity related pick, but I found myself, you ever find yourself in it? I don't know how many of you guys do audiobooks, but then you find yourself in the same physical place where you were when you were listening to an audiobook and you kind of nostalgically think like, oh man, it was really great playing this game while listening to this audiobook in this place. And then you're in that place. And then, I finally was like, maybe I should just listen to that audiobook again. So I'm indulging myself. And since I'm all caught up on podcasts, I'm redoing the Gentleman Bastard series, starting with The Lies of Locke Lamora by Scott Lynch. It's fantastic.
What game were you playing before?
To be honest, it was playing Hearthstone again. I got back into Hearthstone out in places and I was like, oh, look at me. This is like, maybe I'll just complete that picture. And so I did.
My pick is specifically a video of a friend of Night Attack and an all around rad guy, Mikey Newman. He does the Movies with Mikey series.
So good. Did you just watch the Interstellar one?
I did. And I thought that was really cool. But what I wound up really enjoying that I had not caught was his Galaxy Quest review. And what I think it spends a lot of time talking about what makes a classic comedy and why comedy can very often be kind of ephemeral, and specifically why, very often we might be coming to the end of kind of a great gigantic boom of improvised comedy. And largely a lot of the I forget his name now, but Galaxy Quest goes into why this movie kind of has its own timeless sort of nature to it, and really compares it a little bit, I mean, very favorably to Ghostbusters in terms of it giving its characters stakes in terms of it Judd Apatow, in terms of it bringing a lot of these themes kind of home. And I wound up getting into a Twitter conversation about, you know, for example, the difference between something like Galaxy Quest, which really punched above its weight, This Is the End, which I thought was a very funny movie, but ultimately had characters that you couldn't necessarily relate to, journeys that weren't necessarily clear, and rules that were never fleshed out. And that's something that Galaxy Quest does really, really well, and Mikey can explain all of that far more eloquently than I can. So go ahead and check out Movies with Mikey in general.
Plus, he can remember Judd Apatow's name.
And he remembered Judd Apatow's name, which is certainly something that I was not able to.
Peter, do you have a pick?
I hadn't even thought about it until like 30 seconds ago. I've been so bouncing back and forth between editing that manuscript and author page with you that I have not done anything for like the last month outside of sit in my basement, which is, you know, where I am here. Nothing. Nothing is coming into my head right now.
Your pick is the basement? We can all hang out in your basement? Please say we can all hang out in your basement.
Yes, the pick is my basement. Come hang out in the basement. There's lots of awesome stuff to do in it. And it's
nice. It does look pretty rad, actually.
Yeah.
My Colorado apartment there.
yes.
Peter's basement is really awesome. In fact, if you just randomly, you know, go pick anything off, there's always a story. He's got an amazing collection of Game of Thrones beers.
Wow.
Nice. You heard of these?
Yeah. Pardon? No, I remember they started coming out around like the second or third season, right?
Yeah. You give me 1 second. I'll show you. Those are my Game of Thrones beer shelves. And right here are the actual bottles.
Yeah, what was the brewery that did this?
This is Omegang.
Omegang, yeah. Yep. No, I remember I had a very unfortunate night on Omegang Wit one day when I was still living in California. Called me vomiting on the floor.
Oh my. I don't recommend going that far into it, but
nor should you. But it was because the beer was so darn tasty that I kept having all of them.
I know, right? Their next beer actually comes out on September 19th, I believe.
Which one is that? Do you know what it is?
Or
is it
they're going to put out a Belgian red and I think either a wheat or a blonde. Nice. And it'll be, I mean, you have to keep an eye out for it because it generally sells out across the country within a couple days.
Wow.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Dude, big up. Andrew?
Me? My turn? My pick is, listen, it's worth listening to or checking out if you're, I'm just trying to get deep into the history of books and literature and understanding where different genres started and formats did. And I finished it, and I can't say that, like, man, this was a rip-roaring adventure and I loved it, but it was certainly pivotal, important for understanding where the genre started from. And that was, I finally finished King Solomon's Mines, which was by Sir H. Rider Haggard, which is the story of Alan Quatermain, which is one of the most successful series of all time about this gentleman, well, this adventurer in Africa, an elephant hunter, and who every sort of story that's ever come since then, whether it be Indiana Jones or other sort of adventure stories, were influenced very much by this. You can get this if you have, like, as Bryce has pulled up on the page here, if you get the Kindle ebook for free, if you're a Kindle Unlimited subscriber, you can get the audiobook for like 99 cents. Oh, wow. And it is very much written of that age, 1885. Is that still Victorian or is that Edwardian? What period would that be?
I think that's Victorian, right?
That is Victorian. Victorian goes until about 1904.
So it is definitely worth it to see. It's about, you know, the adventure story sort of genre started from there. So I listened to that. Now I've started on Journey to the Center of the Earth by Jules Verne, which I would say is probably a little bit more interesting of a story. But it's just I do think it's worthwhile to check these things out to see where they started from. So that is my pick.
Dude,
is awesome. King Solomon's Mines, a book written 130 years ago.
130 years young, King Solomon's Mines.
Mm-hmm. Gentlemen, everybody, it's been after.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.